There are certain sounds we expect from the vehicles we drive, and when those sounds change from, say, hums and purrs to rattles and scrapes, we know something's wrong. Our next guest has heard many of these over the years. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us our call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. Again, that's 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. And this time around, let's start with how to help a technician figure out what's wrong with your car. Zach, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. Always good to have you.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So are people usually pretty good at giving you indication? I mean, I imagine there are some things that are going to be mysteries coming into the shop. And so it helps when they can describe the symptoms a bit.
Certainly, yeah. The more a customer can describe the issue, the better it's going to be for the technician in the back who's trying to solve the puzzle. So I would encourage drivers to use their senses if they just look for anything out of the ordinary, because not everybody, but most people are pretty in tune with their car, I think. And if they start to smell something funny, they might wonder what that is, or if they hear something funny, wonder what it is. I would just encourage you to not ignore it, because generally it's not going to go away. It's going to get worse, and it's a symptom of something going on.
That's a big one. The don't ignore it because it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
Thing. You find a lot of people do that, and including the person across the table from you. It's like, I'll deal with this later.
Yeah. You know, things, the other day, for instance, on my car, I started to notice just a little, the slightest little squeak. Now, I know what that is, but I can tell you, or I can tell myself, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And so I'm keeping an eye on it. And that's a cautious approach too. You know, just kind of keep an eye on it, or keep an ear on it, or keep a nose on it, whatever sense you're using. But you want to just don't ignore things for too long, because it almost always ends up costing more money and taking more time, and it's more of an inconvenience. And in today's day and age, people's time is so valuable that when they're down without their car, it's a big problem in their lives. So
squeaks in particular can indicate issues with the brakes, for example. And if you wait a long time on brakes, what extra step are you going to have to take to get those fixed?
Well, with brakes, waiting with brakes, I would say instead of it costing more in that unique case, it's just a safety concern, and it's never a good idea to wait on safety issues. You always want to have your full braking capacity. You know, I have a funny story I wanted to tell you. The other day I was driving to Grants Pass, and a guy passed me in the left lane. I was with a friend. We were going to pick up a piece of equipment. So we were in my pickup truck. It's an old truck, 22 years old. And a big new truck, heavy duty, like diesel or something, was pulling a coffee kiosk in the left lane. Mm-hmm. And instead of having a door on the back of the kiosk, the door wasn't there, and it had a big wood platform that was hinged and affixed to the back of the kiosk. And after the truck got about 40 feet ahead of us, the ramp came loose and just dropped onto the highway and was being dragged behind the kiosk. And inside, we could see four totes stacked on top of each other. And before we knew it, the totes slowly moved their way out the door and spilled onto the freeway, littering kitchen equipment, like pots and pans
and
plates.
All the stuff they need to run this
coffee
kiosk.
Yeah, there's a guy behind me on a motorcycle. And you can imagine at 70 miles an hour, the quick maneuvering everybody on the freeway was doing, left, right, slamming on the brakes. Cars were going everywhere. And in that moment, you need every bit of steering, suspension, brakes that you can get to try and avoid flying pots and pans,
right,
whatever it is. And so with brakes, you know, squeaking isn't always an indication that your brakes are in poor condition. It would be more like a grinding or a rough kind of metal on metal. A lot of times squeaking is just it's just kind of a cheap brake pad, or the brakes weren't assembled with the right amount of grease in the right amount of places.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be an indicator, and I would encourage anyone, if they're concerned, just bring it in. So don't ignore brake issues. That's the moral of that story.
Okay. Zach Edwards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange for this month's edition of the Squeaky Wheel, our car care segment. We can swap some stories. You can ask some questions. We'd love to hear from you at 800-838-3760 over the phone, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the noticing things that your car does. I mean, is there a pretty good set of categories of things that people will feel versus things they'll hear versus things they'll smell?
Yeah, as far as feeling things, that's a good one. You know, a common symptom to feel would be vibrations. Mm-hmm. A lot of vibrations have to do with something rotating in the powertrain. So, you know, a spinning drive shaft or a spinning axle or a rotating wheel, your wheels can become out of balance if you hit a big pothole, or maybe even slowly parallel parking, you bump a curb. That can cause a wheel weight to fall off of your wheel, and the weights are on there to make the wheel perfectly balanced. And so even
that's the little doohickeys that hang on the outside of the rim.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. And a lot of times nowadays with many cars having fancy rims, the wheel weights are on the inside, and so you can't really see them anymore. They stick on with stickers instead of cramp on or clamp on, but they can become dislodged. And if your wheel's, you know, even a quarter or a half ounce out of balance at freeway speeds, that can really present a strong vibration inside the cabin area. And so that's a pretty common one. And I guess smells, back to the smells, a really common smell is the sweet kind of maple syrup smell, I call it.
Ethylene glycol?
Yeah, that's the antifreeze or the coolant, which is the same thing. But when that gets hot or when it drips onto something hot, it burns it and it kind of smells like breakfast. And I think that's why it's so dangerous for animals.
Yeah, I've heard about that it's a very sweet taste, and that's one of the reasons that cats like it. So if you're going to be changing, you should be dumping your stuff in the driveway anyway, but cats have been known to lap it up and die.
Yeah, it's very toxic. It's hard on the liver. But if you smell that, it's an indication that something is leaking, because the cooling system is a sealed system, so you should never smell your coolant. And a lot of times, if you're perceptive, you can catch that really early and bring the car in before the leak goes from being very small to very large at a very inopportune moment.
Right. Like all of a sudden your radiator cracks open or something.
Yeah, you're trying to get to that job interview, or you're trying to get to your kids' play, and then boom, you know, a small leak erupts, especially in high heat of summertime. Small leaks can just go all at once.
Are antifreezes still set up to do? I mean, I remember these ads from the 60s and 70s about, you know, they'll seal the leak. You know, the small pinhole leaks will get sealed by the coolant itself. Is that still a thing, or is that ceased
no,
to be?
No. They do sell quick leak fixes at the parts store, and they're chemically created to not coagulate until they first mix with the ethylene glycol and then get exposed to oxygen. So once they're exposed to the outside air, that's when they kind of crust up and form.
Okay, you don't want them crusting up inside the radiator. That was, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
A question about vibrations then, because I remember having a discussion years ago with somebody who insisted that if you feel a vibration in your car and then you can feel it on the steering wheel, that's more likely either tires or wheel balancing in some form. Or if you can feel it in your seat, that's more the front end alignment kind of thing.
If you feel it in the steering wheel, it's going to be in your front tires, probably, not your back tires.
Sure.
If you feel it underneath you, it can be not necessarily an alignment issue. Alignment issues are not always apparent to the driver, but they're apparent to anybody looking at the tires and the wear on the tires. And that's why, again, it's really good to just have some trusted mechanic looking at your car 2, 3, 4 times a year, because you can ruin a set of tires very fast with a wheel alignment issue and never really know, because the symptoms are kind of invisible if you're not looking at your tires from underneath and really carefully inspecting them. But if you're feeling the vibration underneath your seat, that could be that's probably going to be more of a drive shaft in an all-wheel drive car. It's going to have a drive shaft coming from the front of the car to the rear tires to drive those rear tires, and that is spinning at a high rate of speed. And so that too is balanced with weights that are welded onto it. And if time and usage of a car can just lead to one of those weights coming off, and then that drive shaft gets out of balance and it starts hammering on the bottom side of the car, it's not actually hitting the car. In extreme cases, I guess it should.
You're right.
Yeah, and they have U-joints, too, on those drive shafts.
I had a technician once who was able to diagnose that it was the U-joints going out. I said, you feel that shudder as you accelerate? That's your U-joints going out on your drive shaft.
Yep. And, of course, if that gets ignored for too long, then that's going to that drive shaft is hooked to your rear differential, and that rear differential has an input shaft. And that input shaft is supported by a bearing, and that bearing gets ruined when the device hooked to it has excessive movement. And so there's a perfect example of one problem leading to a second problem in a second component, which then could go on and on.
Which is one more reason to not ignore anything going on
exactly.
with the car, because
exactly.
the thing that you ignore today may wear out, then it'll take a bunch of other things with it, too.
Exactly, yeah.
Zach Edwards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. What's going on with your vehicle? What sort of shudder or wobble or grinding sound are you hearing or experiencing as you drive your vehicle? Or what have you had in the past that puzzled both you and the mechanic and that you were able to figure out together with your technician? Join us on the Exchange. Swap stories, ask questions, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I am struck over and over again, no matter the vehicle, by the range of things that can account for certain kinds of vehicle behavior. Certain kinds of like, gee, it's a little slow to get up to power. It seems like it's missing or something. And it's like, well, your plugs are fine. You know, if you have a distributor, your distributor's fine. In one of the cases, it came down to plug wire. And another one, it came down to fuel filter. So mm-hmm. totally different reasons for a very similar kind of problem.
Yeah. They're simple in theory, but complex in design. And so, you know, a car really only needs, a conventional car really only needs air, fuel, and spark. So three things, but how those three things get delivered and at what time is very critical for proper operation. And sometimes we have to follow the motto, the KISS model, which is keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. And you just remember that it's only air, fuel, or water, or air, fuel, or spark, sorry. But fuel delivery is a big, big deal, and it's hard to see fuel delivery. So we have to look at data points nowadays. You know, you're looking at how is the computer trying to adjust the air-fuel ratio. And the only way we can really see that is by using a scan tool, which is the computer interface device. And you mm-hmm. can see if the computer's been utilizing a leaning strategy or an enrichment strategy. And we can see that in the short term or the long term. So we can see, you know, how long has this been going on? If this car's been, if the computer's been trying to lean things out, that would be an indication that the car's been running rich. And if that's been happening for quite a while, that's an indication of a problem. So there's constantly short-term adjustments being made, and that's normal. But when the same adjustment has had to be made over the long term, something is out of whack and out of balance.
Does that kind of thing show up in error codes? I mean, will you get an error code
eventually,
saying the engine's been running rich or the engine's been running lean consistently?
And so that's the strategy of the program is it's looking for long-term adjustments that that shouldn't be there. So short-term adjustments are regular. The computer is constantly adjusting the air-fuel mixture to make it the optimal mixture so that it can maximize fuel economy and minimize emissions. But if there's a long-term adjustment having to be made, that indicates a problem. And if that problem is present too many times over the certain duration of time, then your check engine light's going to come on.
So how much stuff do the onboard diagnostics computers do now? For example, in the situation I just cited, which was on a 98 truck, I can't imagine that you'd be getting error codes about, hey, your plug wires are bad.
Actually do. So
really?
I have a 97 Toyota, and it's hard to believe that that's a 22-year-old truck.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 260,000 miles on it. And so the onboard diagnostics or the self-diagnostic capabilities of the car are, I wouldn't call them primitive, but they're close. You know, primitive.
Close to primitive.
Yeah, yeah. Primitive would be, you know, the onboard diagnostics version one. We're currently in version two, which we've been in for 23 years. They talk about version three coming out. I'm not sure where we're at with it.
But it's not imminent, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's almost like everything's been put on pause because of the, you know, the hybrid revolution and now maybe just full electric cars. And so, but the onboard diagnostic or OBD version two started in 96. And those cars could self-diagnose to a certain degree. And so they're certainly going to pick up a misfire, which would be like a, you know, bad spark plug or a bad spark plug wire or a plugged fuel injector, anything that causes that one cylinder to not fire normally. It will pick that up, but it might not pick it up as quickly. And it also might not be able to pinpoint the nature of the misfire as precisely. So the amount of error codes that it can give the technician are far less in 1998 than they are today. So there's a lot more codes available for programmers to put into a car's program because the codes are regulated by the government. So it used to be cars would just make up their, manufacturers would just make up their own codes.
That was my next question. When you get new ones every year, it sounds like there's a cap on that.
That was really, really difficult for the technicians because you'd have to know all these different codes and what do they mean and what sets that code off for every different kind of car. They're universal now. So things are getting easier as things get more complex.
We're talking to Zach Edwards once again about things getting easier and more complex at the same time with automotive repair. He is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive. You can join us on the squeaky wheel with your car care issue at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Air filters. It occurs to me to ask this again as we get into summer now that it's July. And how critical it is in a place that gets very little rain, as much of this region does, to make sure that as you're driving on dusty roads, particularly if you're driving on dusty roads, to make sure that your engine's performing well with the air cleaner, the air filter being updated.
Yeah, air filters are still a big deal. They're very important. The difference between back in the old days and nowadays that your car can measure if your air filter is clogged. It can determine that airflow has been, or air intake flow has been reduced, and it can adjust fuel delivery based on that, but it's still going to be a reduction in performance. Now, the driver might not notice that because, again, new cars are so quick to make adjustments and they're so forgiving that a lot of times symptoms are happening that a driver, if they're perceptive and in tune, they might notice, but they might not. With all the smoke that we've had in the past, and hopefully don't have in the future, but could potentially have in the future, it's really important that we keep our filters in good shape because an air filter, you know, they filter in microns. So your filter can be 25% clogged and visibly you can't even tell.
Well, that's right. You mentioned that before.
Yeah.
It'll look like it's really not in a bad place at all. But
right,
it's still,
because you're
it's
looking
still
at microns. Mm-hmm. I mean, who can see a micron? I can't. So once your filter is visibly dirty, it could be 50% clogged, and that's a big reduction in air intake. I want the listeners to know that your engine is really just a big air pump. It's sucking air in and pushing air out the tailpipe. So it's, if you think about a pump that pumps water from one container into another, that's kind of what your engine is doing. It's pumping air in, mixing it with a tiny amount of fuel, and then compressing that mixture, which makes it volatile. And when the spark is introduced, it burns that mixture. And as the mixture burns, it expands. And that's what forces the movement. So it takes a chemical mixture and turns it into a mechanical movement. And then when it's done, it just exhausts the spent mixture right out the tailpipe.
You're burning things. Yeah, your engine's burning things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to have good air in there.
And it's an air pump. And so that air filter really just filters the air so that it's clean, so that you don't get contaminants inside your engine. And last summer, I mean, that smoke that we experienced was so incredible. It could destroy an air filter in one drive. I mean, we had customers come up. You know, a lot of people drive up here from the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. You drive through that campfire. I mean, you could see the particulates, just chunks of ash floating through the air. You can imagine, you know, how important your air filter was, but also how clogged it got
right.
in just one single drive through conditions like that. So,
speaking of important. Air filters, we have a contact from Medford. I'm not sure the name here, but this caller left a message behind about discovering rat droppings in the air filter. It looks like rodents have moved to the engine department. How do you get them out? And I would assume that means both the animals and the droppings.
Yeah, it's really hard to deal with rodents. We do it on a really pretty regular basis, and rodents love to crawl into that area because if you can imagine, again, the water pump scenario, or, you know, a pump, it's got to draw water from one container and put it into another. Well, there's an entrance into that air filter area that's, it's like an open gate,
mm-hmm.
and that's where fresh air comes in. And so rodents can find their way into that. And of course the gate would be the air filter, but rodents will chew up that paper element. They like to make a nest, and it's out of the elements in there, and it's a really common place. And so what we tend to do is we'll fasten. First, you got to make it uncomfortable for the critter, but then you have to affix some sort of a wire mesh in front of that air intake scoop.
Something small enough to keep them out.
Yeah, and then you have to figure out a way to drive them out of your car, because they're going to keep trying to come back, and they might relocate in your engine compartment.
So not just dealing with humans and their issues with automobiles, we also have rodents to consider as well. We always learn something new on this week. Zach Edwards is our guest. He's the proprietor of Ashland Automotive. Always good to have you here.
Thanks, Jeff.